Hi, I'm Sarah Abel, and a warm welcome to this edition of The Marriage Challenge, the podcast brought to you every month by Care for the Family. Well, this month we're going to do something a little different. If you're a regular listener, you'll know that we normally have a guest married couple that we talk to. But this month, I'm thrilled to be joined instead by Care for the Family's speakers, Catherine Hill and Philip Gennardi. Great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Now, Catherine and Philip are about to go on the road on the new tour for It Takes Two, which is a marriage and relationship event that will be starting this March. But let me introduce them for any of you who don't know them. Catherine is married to Richard. They've been married 30 years and have four grown-up children. And we interviewed Catherine and Richard. In fact, you were our first interview couple on the Marriage Challenge when you were talking about the power of positive words. And it's a great podcast. Do go back and have a listen to that one. Now, Catherine and Richard, you've got two big events coming up this year, haven't you? What family events?
We have, Sarah. We've got two weddings. So, first of all, our son's getting married in July. And then just 8 weeks after that, our daughter's getting married in September. So it's going to be a fun year.
And Philip is married to Kate. And again, you were guests on our podcast as well before, weren't you? You were talking about the importance of making time for each other.
Time, yes. Yeah, and we've just made some time for one another. We've just been on holiday together for a week. Obviously a lot younger than Catherine, so we've only been married for 20 years. But just been in Hong Kong for a week, which was absolutely fantastic.
And Philip and Kate have two teenage daughters at home. Where were they last week when you were in Hong Kong then?
Well, they were having real fun staying at home with all their friends staying over and responsible adults as well. So when we got back, we said, "Did you miss us?" They said, "No, not really."
Excellent. Well, this month on this episode, we thought we'd do something a little bit different as we've got you both here. And what we thought we'd look at is some of the myths around being a perfect couple. Recent research has showed that couples can really feel the strain that they need to have an ideal relationship. So we wanted to look at some of the myths around relationships and perhaps bust a few of those myths. So we're going to look at those together. So Catherine, I think the first one is coming your way. So the myth that we've got here is we should never argue because arguing is bad for a relationship. What would you say to that one?
Well, do you know, that is a myth I totally bought into when we were first married. I came from a home where there wasn't arguing. Conflict was kind of avoided at all costs, and I thought that was the thing you did. And so the first time we had an argument, I remember thinking that I was quite surprised. I thought, gosh, you know, Richard is the one that is totally in the wrong because he seems to be expressing things and, you know, getting a bit angry and all the rest of it. And I bottled it all up inside, and I honestly thought that that was a really good thing to do. And in those early years, I was quite prone to sulking. Mm-hmm. I remember one time we were driving to London, and we had to go somewhere on the way, and we got pretty lost. And I was driving, and Richard said to me, "Turn left, turn at the next left turn." And for some reason, it was raining, it was dark. I did turn the next left turn, which happened to be into a petrol station, which wasn't great. So it wasn't what he meant. And he was really cross because we were late and we were lost and all the rest of it. And so he was saying, "Why did you do that?" And I didn't say a thing, and I just went into a massive sort of, I withdrew completely, and the rest of that evening was pretty rubbish. And I honestly thought then that I was doing the right thing, but since I've discovered that actually it's just as bad not to express how you feel when you're having an argument, and it's much better to get it all out into the open in a good way. There are ways we can learn to argue well, and that actually can be a strength to a marriage, I think, when you're able to do that.
It was funny because we had this 20th anniversary trip, and while we were on it, we were just joking about the fact that when we had our 10th anniversary trip, we had this incredible, massive meltdown. It was almost like the end of everything. We thought, you know, the marriage is not going to survive because all these things came up. And I said, "I hope it's not going to be like this, this time." And Kate, she said, "Oh no, we're in a totally different place." And then 24 hours later, we're having this big sort of argument. And at the end of it, we kind of, it was almost like you felt like, okay, it's good that we don't take each other for granted, and that I still have to be sensitive. And just because maybe some of the big arguments aren't happening, actually sometimes expressing things in conflict It just brings things up into the open. It makes sure that you're being open, honest with one another. Clears the air.
There's a phrase, isn't there? It says something like, emotions aren't buried dead, they're buried alive. And I think that is so true. And years ago, before I worked for Care for the Family, I was a family lawyer. And so a lot of the people that came to see me were coming because they were separating, they were getting divorced. And I would say so many weren't just one thing out of the blue, but it was a build-up of little things over a period of time that they hadn't, for whatever reason, been able to resolve. So I think it is a myth. It is definitely a myth.
Excellent. So we're debunking that one. We're debunking that one. That one's gone. Philip, we'll start with you with number two, I think.
Okay.
We should always have something to talk about. This is an interesting one. We should always have something to talk about.
Yeah, I think if you talk about the ideal Hollywood-style marriage, the happily ever after fairy tale Disney relationship, you tend to think about people who are always able to look into each other's eyes, to talk endlessly. I remember the first time Kate and I actually went out, we went for our first date. She didn't know it was a date, she just thought it was me being friendly. But we did, we talked literally into the night. We ended up in this Pizza Hut and we talked until the guys put the chairs on the table. And then you think, well, that's what it will be like. That's what all of our married life will be like. But actually, it's not possible to sustain that kind of level of deep conversation the whole time. And I think what I've learned is that it's not so much the intensity of your conversation, but it's the consistency of the conversation. That if you can keep those lines of communication always open, so little bits of conversation. And sometimes you think, oh, it's just trivial, or again, we can't think of anything to talk about apart from the children, or we're talking about, you know, silly things that don't matter. Actually, what they do is they keep the lines of communication open. And I think the more you're together, the more you naturally share. And so you have less opportunities for those big downloads. But when you do need to talk, there's an ease between you. So I think, and I think equally, sometimes if you are close and if you're communicating all the time, there are times when it's just that companionable silence where you can just enjoy one another's company. You don't have to talk the whole time.
I think it's interesting what Philip was saying about what we talk about, because we've just reached the stage when our youngest has headed off to university. So we are in the empty nest. Yeah. And actually, it is really, I mean, we're really loving it, but there have been moments when I thought, gosh, you know, the things we used to talk about all the time were so much to do with the children and who was doing what and who was taking who where. And that kind of almost administrative stuff was the things that we ended up talking about rather than the real stuff. And so it's been good to kind of explore what that might be. And I think the more we do stuff together, that almost interests that we have separately, interests that we have together, I think that creates things for us to talk about.
I mean, it is a myth, but actually, in some ways, there's some quite good things to actually have the intention to try and explore conversation. So when there are times where you feel like, actually, we've run out of things to say, to be able to think, actually, let's explore a little bit. So just being away for 7 days together in Hong Kong, you know, we talked night and day. And then you get to a certain point where actually you feel like you've talked everything out. And what would happen is at those points, one of us would say, so where are we going in the next 5 years? Or what's our dreams for this area of life? Or where do we see ourselves going in 10 years? And those kind of out of the box conversation pieces. So sometimes actually being aware that I'm not quite sure what to talk about makes you think about some of the bigger things, the deeper things that are not just where's the shopping coming from, what we're going to do with the children.
But we say it's good to talk, but you might not always have something to talk about. Yep. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, okay. It's good to be quiet if you both want to be quiet. That if one of you's got tons on your mind and you just want the other person to ask you some questions, then have at it.
Brilliant. Okay, number three, coming your way, Catherine. I'm not allowed to dislike anything about my partner.
Oh, there we go. Well, I would say that is a myth. But so when we get married, you know, it's the package, isn't it? We're promising to love somebody as they are that day, as they are 30 years later, when, you know, they might not be quite the same shape maybe that we were when we got married, that, you know, we've changed. And I think if we're promising just to love someone as they are that day, or we get married thinking we're going to change them, then that is a recipe for disaster. But having said that, there are going to be niggles that just irritate us about each other. And sometimes it's about us changing, isn't it? So I know one of the things that drives Richard mad about me is we have three light switches in our kitchen, and they turn on different lights. And I cannot, we've lived in our house for over 20 years, I cannot get it right as to which light switch to turn on. And if he would say to me, if he's tired, it really annoys him. If he's not tired, actually, it's just quite funny. And I think that's often true with a lot of those things. But that's something I don't think I'll ever, unless I have a little notice above the light switch, which I wouldn't really go for, I don't think I'm ever going to get that right. Whereas there are other habits that there's a particular way that I shut the bin. There's a door in our kitchen where the rubbish bin is, and I keep shutting it in a way that is actually breaking the door. Now, I can choose not to do that. I just keep forgetting. So I think sometimes it's us that has to make the effort, and sometimes it's us that has to just accept that that's who we've married, that that's how they are, and choose just to not let it really, really drive us mad.
Let it go. Okay, so that's myth number three. And the final myth, Philip, I always have to feel in love with my partner.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this, the whole in love thing. I remember when we were first getting together and we were first engaged, we would both say to the other, do you love me? Yes, I love you. But are you in love with me? Yes, I'm in love with you. And without really knowing what that means, I think in love can feel like the flush of feelings and, you know, the excitement. But the key thing is love. And I think love is very much, it's an action, it's a commitment, it's a decision that I make. And it's not love that keeps my marriage alive, but it's marriage that keeps the love alive. Because if I'm committed to someone, then I will love them, and I'll choose to love them. And I think we're a lot more complicated than people realise. That our emotions and our feelings towards another person, a lot of the time they are choices. Psychologists will tell you that if you behave in a certain way, even if you don't feel it, the emotions follow. So if you behave towards your partner as if you were madly in love with them, actually those emotions tend to come. We are what we act, we are what we do. So I think when you get inevitably to the times where you feel actually those feelings of love, they seem to have gone, or they've diminished, don't panic, don't worry, but know that a marriage is a safe place where we're committed to one another, and we'll work this through, and we act in loving ways, and those emotions, they do come back.
Brilliant. Well, I think we've busted each of those four myths between us. And if you've got comments to make on any of those myths, then please go to our Facebook page, and we'd love to hear from you about your thoughts on any of those myths or other myths that you think people might feel that they have to live up to in their relationships. Now, Philip and Catherine, before you go, it'd be great to hear a little bit about It Takes Two.
Okay, so it is for any couple. So if you're engaged, you're thinking about getting engaged, if you're newly married, if you've been married for a long, long time, there'll be something for everybody there. Whether your marriage is in a good place or whether you're going through a difficult time, there'll be something for you. It's a short evening, but actually in that time, I think, often, you know, we can learn one thing maybe that will strengthen a marriage that's in a good place, or even just turn around a marriage that's going through a tough time.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an amazing evening, and it's going to be a valuable investment for anybody. I mean, I'm a man, and I think that any man should go, because for a man just to go to an evening like this is great points. You know, you don't even have to listen to it or do anything, just go, and instantly you've got tremendous credit with your wife. But I do think that it will be an evening where you can learn and you can grow and enrich your relationship.
And it will be fun, and you know, there'll be some film clips. We'll be talking from our own experience of our respective marriages. Lots of stories.
50 years of experience, right?
There you go. 50 years between us. And probably where we've got it wrong more than where we've got it right. And the really, really important thing for people to know is that there's no group work. They just have to come and sit back and relax and listen to what goes on.
Brilliant. Well, your challenge this month, because normally we have a challenge that we set you this month. So this month it's book your tickets for It Takes Two and see if you can go to an event near you. I've got the locations here: Truro, Glasgow, Newton Abbey, Sunderland, Norwich, Nottingham, and all the details of those are on the website. Well, it just leaves for me to say thank you, Catherine and Philip, for joining us for this special edition of the Marriage Challenge. It's been great to have you with us and thank to bust you. Some myths together. Hope the tour goes really well.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us, and we look forward to tackling another Marriage Challenge together next month. Goodbye.
You have been listening to the Marriage Challenge podcast. For further information about our courses, resources and events, visit us at www.careforthefamily.org.uk.